They were nearly there. Just one more day and they'd enter the capital. And what an entrance that would be. Time is ticking. The end is indeed nigh. Just one more town to pass through, Jericho, then cross the Jordan, and Jerusalem would hove into view. Jericho, a city with such a history and a prime place for pilgrims to gather. They pick up supplies, they would rest before that final push up to Jerusalem. And so many people were around, milling around Jesus, watching, listening, wondering what would happen next. Luke tells us in his gospel that the encounter with Bart, you don't mind me calling you Bart, do you? Bartimaeus is such a mouthful, and it's really quite old-fashioned, so do you mind? No, good, thanks. Okay. Anyway, Luke tells us of the encounter with Bart happens on the way into the city. And after the encounter, Jesus carries on and has lunch with the tree-hugging Zac. But Mark says he meets up with Bart as he's leaving. The crowds are really noisy. The streets are full of traffic, the din of commerce, people clamoring for attention and sales. And among it all, this extra knot of pilgrims surrounding Jesus of Nazareth as they make their way towards Jerusalem. A blind beggar sitting by the side of the Camino hears who it is who has swelled the crowds, and he starts to shout at the top of the voice with all the strength that he possesses, "Jesus, son of Nazareth, have mercy on me. Jesus, son of Nazareth, have mercy on me. Jesus, son of Nazareth, have mercy on me." Shut up, beggar! The crowds turn on him. Some kick, some use words I cannot use in this place. They find his presence, they find his being, they find his disability an offense. But this animosity only fuels Bart's determination. And louder he shouts, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stops and asks those around to call him. The crowd's attitude seems to soften a little. Cheer up, on your feet, you've got his attention. He's calling you. Bart casts aside everything, all he possesses, his cloak, his donations, and he jumps up to face Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Rabbi, I want to see. Go, your faith has healed you." No touching, no ritual. Just words exchanged, faith acknowledged, and Bart's sight is immediately and completely restored. And Jesus continues to Jerusalem, to his triumphal entry, to his cross, with one more disciple beside him. Jesus was on his way. Whether you look at Luke or whether you look at Mark, he was passing through. He had his eyes fixed on Jerusalem and all that would entail when he met Bart. His mind and his heart would have been rammed with thoughts and emotions. He had the biggest task ahead of him. He had the greatest agenda to fulfill, and yet he still had time to stop, to be attentive, to bring wholeness to a nobody, a victim of the system. He had time to interact with someone whom the law gave provision, Leviticus 19:14, but for whom society and the crowd either ignored or were hostile towards. Our days are packed, our diaries are full, and even if they aren't, we have our own agenda and our own plans. Phones to remain glued to, desires to fulfill, places to go, gardens to cultivate, games to play, screens to watch, people to see. Would we have heard? Would we have stopped? Would we have noticed the big issue seller? Would we have noticed the blind beggar? Would we have made time? Despite having the most important task, the most important agenda in all history, Jesus had time for Bart. So we just pause there. Lord, help us to not be so full of ourselves, our own agenda, our own busyness, that we don't notice those around us. Those who need to know that you care, that we care. Who need genuine human interaction, who need warmth, who need attention, who need wholeness. Lord, help us to not pay lip service to our vision, but to love our neighbours. Amen. So Jesus stops. He hears the man's cry and he calls for him to come. And when they're face to face, he asks him, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now we may think, duh, it's obvious, isn't it? And it may well be. But Jesus chooses to ask anyway. He doesn't assume. And in doing so, he gives the man the dignity of making his own choice, of articulating his own needs, of expressing his own faith. "Rabbi, I want to see." And there it is, out in the open. Bart wants light instead of darkness, inclusion in the heart of community instead of being always pushed to the margins on the side of the road. He wants to be a beneficiary of the system rather than a victim. And he believes that Jesus, the Son of David, the Messiah, has both the ability and the will to do this for him. And he's right. Jesus does. Bart wants to see. He wants to be considered normal. He wants to be whole. And Jesus starts the healing process by simply asking him what he wants, rather than assuming that he already knows. Jesus sees and treats Bart as the already restored, fully redeemed, whole and God image-bearing man that he was created and destined to be. He gives him the dignity of his own voice and his own choice and his own response. And he does this, starts the process by asking, "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus refuses to collude with the status quo that assumes, the crowd that bullies, and how given ways were acceptable of dealing with disabled people. He welcomes the man, and through their interaction, Bart is fully restored. It's the opposite approach of, "Does he take sugar?" Where the person in the wheelchair, the woman with the disfigured face, the man with one arm, is ignored, talked over, their needs assumed. So what does Jesus' attitude and approach teach us as individuals and as a church? I'd like it to think it says to the person who can't see or who are labelled disabled, special needs, mentally frail, that you are welcome. You are valued. Jesus welcomes and accepts you and wants to hear your voice. And his church welcomes you and values and wants to hear your voice. I'd like to think it says to the person who feels they live on the margins, who finds people are usually hostile towards them or think they should be written off, that is in Jesus. In Jesus, there is someone to whom, in private and in confidence or on the road, you can call out. State your needs and find full acceptance and hope and encouragement. And that in this church you will find a safe place to call out, to state your need and find full acceptance, hope and encouragement. I think it says to us as a church community that we need to be more attentive, more compassionate, more ready to ask rather than assume. And then to make the necessary changes to our attitude, to our buildings, to our activities, in the light of what we hear. so that this church is indeed a safe and accessible place for everyone. Jesus sees and treats all people, as Astrid has said, as the already restored, fully redeemed, whole and God image-bearing people that we are created and destined to be. He gives each and every person the dignity of their own voice, their own choice, their own response. And he would ask us as a church to do the same in our attitudes, in our buildings, in our activities and our policies, so that all know they are loved. Back to Bart. Despite his blindness, Bart is a very perceptive man. Not only in picking a plum location to collect alms from passing pilgrims, but in his understanding of Jesus. He'd obviously heard about Jesus of Nazareth, and from what he discerned, ahead of the throngs on Palm Sunday, he discerned that Jesus was the Messiah, the son of David, and he believed that Jesus was the one who the prophet Isaiah states will guide them. He will lead the blind by ways they have not known. Along unfamiliar paths he will guide them. Who will turn the darkness into light before them and make the rough places smooth. These are the things he will do. He will not forsake them. From the things that Jesus had said and done, from the way he had shown compassion and healed all those who had come to him, in the way that God's ways, his blessing and power were so evidently seen in and through Jesus, Bart perceived that Jesus was the chosen one, the one who would restore God's rule of righteousness and justice and peace, and the one who would lead the blind and not forsake them, the one who would bring wholeness, sight. Bart believed in Jesus. He had faith in who he was. And once he knew he was within hearing shot, he wasn't going to let him pass without an encounter. So Bart shouts for all his worth, having identified him, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Come on, Jesus, chosen one, fulfill the prophecy. Do not forsake me. That's his perception, which now has to be replaced with persistence, because everyone around him tries to shut him up, to put him down and crush him. But this hostile resistance makes him all the louder. "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Such a courageous man, Bart. We have much to learn from him. When everyone is against us, it's so tempting to give up, to concede, to be quiet. Perhaps he could wait until Jesus came by another time. Perhaps it would be better when the crowds were fewer and he didn't have to draw quite so much attention to himself. Perhaps he could delay until it was a more convenient time. What would you do when everyone turns to you and is hostile? But Bart thought not. He realized he doesn't know if Jesus is ever going to go this way again. And Jesus doesn't. That was his window of opportunity. This is his moment, and he's not going to let it pass because he knows this is the chosen one, the one who can revolutionize his life. And even if it does anger and antagonize everyone else, he's not going to let that opportunity pass. And his persistence works, and Jesus calls him. And at this, Bart leaves everything behind. He throws off his cloak. Now, that might not mean anything to us because we've got one or two others hanging in our cupboard. But a cloak was the one essential item that Deuteronomy enshrines in law that you cannot take from someone because it's their one blanket for the night. Without your cloak, you will perish of cold. It was also what he collected his alms in. So in throwing off his cloak, he is leaving everything, coming naked with nothing to Jesus. Jesus asks, Bart responds, And Jesus states, go, your faith has healed you. A tricky one, because we've been often made to think, if only we had the faith, if only we prayed hard or believed, we too would see a miracle healing. Or does it? If faith is the dogged determination, the persistence to keep on going, even when everything seems impossible, if faith means believing in God, even when he seems silent or absent, then perhaps we too have faith enough to approach Jesus with our needs. I've seen that faith here. I believe that Jesus, sorry, the shouting doesn't help. I might have some drink. I wanted you to know it wasn't quiet, but it has a effect. Thank you. Jesus, I believe, by his Spirit can and does still bring complete physical healing. And I will always ask for this. I will persist in prayer. If you come to me and say, will you pray for healing? Absolutely I will. Because Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever, and I will ask him to do that. But our good God does not always answer our prayers as we would like, whatever our level of faith. And we may have to wait till his kingdom comes in its fullness to experience complete wholeness and healing, because that is our sure and certain hope. Every single one of us will know complete restoration one day, life in all its fullness, on the day that Jesus comes again. And until that day, it may be helpful to us also to think of healing as wellness, wholeness, a sense of worth and strength to live as fully as we can until he comes again. And if that is so, then we, like Bart, can go within the shalom of God and get on with our daily lives, because God knows and God cares and he is with us. Or we can do as Bart chooses, and leave everything and follow Jesus. In other your faith has healed you healings, the man with leprosy, the paralyzed man, the hemorrhaging woman, the man with a legion of demons, Jesus tells them to go home, to go back into society, to go to the temple. But here, Bart's going is with Jesus. He leaves everything, his lifestyle, his possessions, his place, on the roadside to follow Jesus. Now, we don't know where that led to. He isn't mentioned by name again in the New Testament. But with his perception, with his persistence, with his faith, I hope he followed Jesus all the way through Palm Sunday, Good Friday, Easter Sunday, Ascension, Pentecost, to become a faith-inspiring man in the early church. We've come to the end of our teaching on the questions that Jesus asked. And today, all of us face a very direct question. What do you want me to do for you? Something Bart would answer with faith and clarity. I want to see. Do you know, Jesus asked the same question of James and John just a few verses beforehand in Mark 10:36. James and John, what do you want me to do for you? Well, I want a place on your right and I want a place on your left when you come to your kingdom in glory. This answer reveals a very different understanding of who Jesus was and what the kingdom is like than that of Bart. It was an understanding that Jesus had to correct. You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to serve, but to be served. No, the other way around, to be served, not to serve. And to give his life as a ransom for many. What do we want? Do we want to see, or do we want kudos and influence? Do we want to be part of the crowd, or do we want to step up and make our mark and leave everything and follow him? This sermon has lived with me for the week. And on Friday night, I was musing, and Jesus said to me, "That question's for you too, Ruth, you know. What do you want me to do for you? I'm so busy sometimes looking out for you and asking the questions for you that I forget Jesus wants to know what I want." And actually, at the moment, I'm a bit kind of preoccupied with grief to be able to answer the question. And that's okay. But the question remains. I can't hedge it. Jesus still wants to know. It may be that just walking through the dark valley with me for the moment is what I want. But if we can't articulate our needs, Jesus still will persist in asking. Because he asks, because he wants to know us, the answerer. So even at the moment is, "Jesus, I'm not in a place to talk about it, but just be with me." That's fine. He wants to have relationship with us. Jesus doesn't even insist that people land on the side with him. Unlike Bart, if you remember, the rich young ruler decided to go away and ponder whether Jesus was worth leaving everything to follow. And Jesus, though he loved him, maybe because he loved him, allowed him to go. The Pharisees decided what to do with Jesus. They decided he was an imposter, that he deserved to die, that he asked for it. Jesus doesn't want us to sit on the fence. He asks, "What do you want me to do with you?" And he doesn't want me, dunno, apathy. He's looking for a direct and genuine connection with us, our very own decision, our choice. And he keeps on asking questions because he wants relationship with us. He wants interaction. When a toddler goes, why, all the time, and they do, they're not doing it because they want encyclopedic knowledge of their pet subject. Even though you might think that's what they want, they don't want that at all. They want your attention. They want you to talk to them. They want you to interact, to commune. And Jesus is just like that child. He wants us to be with him, to love him, to interact with him. He wants more than anything relationship with us. Indeed, he went from Jericho to Jerusalem to the cross to enable this relationship. A restored relationship between God and humanity was made possible on the cross. That's how much he wants a relationship with us. Jesus does not assume he knows what we want, even if it's supposedly obvious. He gives us the dignity of our own voice. He genuinely wants to hear us speak out, to articulate our very own personal needs, our desires, our choice. Jesus looks at us as the already restored, fully redeemed, whole and God image people that we were created to be and that he died to make possible. And he calls to each one of us, "What do you want me to do for you?"